On this episode of Still Loading...
We're looking for a ruby ring.
Then you must be looking for me! I'm Snake-Eyed Snuff, meanest elf this side of World Tree!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Captain N episode, baby. I'm very tired. Ooh. I'm loopy. I'm all over the damn place. I said in last month's episode, we're doing back-to-back recording sessions, and let me tell you, I'm still just as loopy as I was the last session, probably more so. But that's okay, because Captain N is a loopy-ass show, and it's got weird, zany things happening all the time. And of course, to discuss all of that zaniness and all of that insanity is my co-host with the mo-host, Dexter Morrill. Dexter, how are you doing, my friend?
Oh, I am great. How is everybody out there doing in podcast land?
Well, that's actually an unknown section of video land that we see.
Yes.
You never get to see it. We got to find another warp zone. I'm sure Captain N will show up in a podcast land at some point. It's just a bunch of microphones.
Loopiness? I think your loopiness will actually help you make sense of this episode. So
we'll see if I can even stay awake. I am running on empty, and that's going to be fun. So we didn't really do this with last month's episode, so I think we should start off this month's episode with this. What's something that you notice? Like, what's just an observation that you notice with this episode? I'll tell mine in a little bit, but like, what's an overarching or just a general observation, just what stuck out to you?
I would say the first third of this episode, I felt like I was on drugs.
That's fair.
I was desperate. I was like, oh no. Cause when I saw it was Matthew Maurer. Is that the writer's name for this?
Yes. Michael Maurer, excuse me.
Michael Maurer. Pardon me. Yeah, when I saw that it was him again, I was like, all right, we're going to be two for two here. This is going to be awesome. And as it was going, I was like, oh no, because I had the benefit of playing Puss in Boots as a kid and having those memories. And that might have influenced my enjoyment of it and being able to keep up with everything. I'm familiar with Fazanadu and played it once as a kid. I remember borrowing it from a friend.
Oh, I guess we should say what the name of the episode is. It's The Feud of Fazanadu.
Yes. So I was like, okay, I have slight familiar. And then as soon as the episode started, I was like, I don't think I know enough about this game to know what is going on right now. So yeah, it just felt very unhinged.
I also did not play Fazanadu as a kid, and I still have yet to play it, though I've heard good things about it. I did a little bit of Googling, and it turns out so Fazanadu has nothing to do with the Sean Connery movie Xanadu, that roller disco movie or whatever it is. It is the sequel to it's a spinoff or a side story of a game of another game series called Xanadu, which is also known as Dragons, or part of the Dragon Slayer series from Falcom. So Xanadu is specifically known as Dragon Slayer 2, and this is a spinoff of Xanadu. And the reason it's called Fazanadu is because it's the Famicom Xanadu. So Fazanadu.
Yes, exactly. And the thing that they say it the way I did as a kid, Faxanadu.
Yeah.
Because we didn't know that. We just assumed that was the word. We didn't get the what is it, a portmanteau?
It's a portmanteau, yeah. Portmanteau of Famicom and Xanadu. Fazanadu. Right. From what I can tell, it's a pretty popular game at the very least. So I'll give it a shot at some point. But yeah, so this episode, The Feud of Fazanadu, and I'll give my my observation in a moment, came out on October 27th, 1990, written by Michael Maurer. And the game elements, as we are not surprised, is all about Fazanadu. The thing that like really stuck out to me in this episode is that this is Captain N at its worst in terms of making plot points that come out of nowhere. And I say that, like, we can use that as a really good transition in the beginning of the episode. Beginning of the episode has the N team playing football in some random portion of Videoland. They don't really ever describe where. It doesn't seem like it's part of the Palace of Power. I'm kind of confused as to the location of this place. And it really shows, like, at the time there's a big feud between the two teams playing football. Kevin and Game Boy and Duke are on one team, and then Simon, Kid Icarus, and Mega Man are another team, and Princess Lana is pretty much like the referee, kind of officiating between the two. And, you know, there's a lot of insane stuff. There is an animation error I noticed in this. If you notice, when Simon gets the ball, Duke chases him down and then tries to, like, stop him. And so what he does is that he bites his pants and pulls his pants down slightly, right? And it's right. Just the reason it's so goofy here. Hold on, I have a timestamp for you. 1 minute and 8 seconds, maybe 1 minute and 9 seconds. You might have to, like, thumb through it with, like, frame by frame for a little bit. But yeah, 1 minute and 8 seconds or 1 minute and 9 seconds. It is Simon. I'm wondering if it's meant to be like he's just wearing white boxers, but it just looks like they didn't color anything on his legs, like where his pants are getting pulled down. He's just full on Ken doll.
Just, oh yeah, that's,
nothing is there.
Probably supposed to be like white boxer briefs,
but it doesn't look like boxer. It does. No. It just looks like they forgot to animate it,
forgot to colorize it. I'm wondering if there was, like, originally, like, heart boxers or something, and they just ran out of time, or someone was like, you can't show that.
Yeah, I have no idea. I found that amusing, though, at the very least. They're playing football against each other, and they're throwing the old pigskin around, and they're getting really mad at each other, and it becomes a little bit of a rivalry going on. And so there's a pop fly, the ball flies out, and Kid Icarus shoots his bow and arrow at the ball to, I don't know what he was thinking, like, what is shooting the ball going to do? You're going to pop it at the worst, and at the best, you're just going to direct it farther in a different direction. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
I think what the logic is. I'm gonna recover this fumble. It pulls out a bow and arrow.
Yep, he talks about wanting to recover from, and then Kevin's like, not if I can recover it first, or something like that. And he shoots his zapper right into Kid Icarus's arrow, and for reasons I don't understand, it starts a short circuit of the entire football field. Like, every yard line is suddenly lighting up with, like, blue electricity. All the lines, like, every line in this, every crease in line in this stadium is just lighting up with blue electricity. And Game Boy is, like, losing his mind because he's talking about how the system is overloading. The system is overloading. And he's just losing his shit. I think they crossed the
streams.
Yeah, I wrote that. They crossed the streams. Like, you know, like, from straight out of Ghostbusters. They crossed the streams. And I'm reading this with closed caption on, and I always find it funny because, once again, I don't think this is necessarily accurate because it seems like it's machine generated, but it's still kind of amusing. The, Game Boy is trying to warn them that, you know, the system is overloading, and which still doesn't make any sense. It's a fucking football field, so I don't understand how the system's overloading, but whatever. The way closed captioning has captioned this is system overload, prefix rebending. What? I don't think that's actually what he's saying there. At all. Hold on. Let me run it back real quick.
Warning.
He's saying prepare to abandon game, but they have it as prefix rebending.
I like it.
I don't know what that means. What do they think prefix rebending means? It's prepare to abandon game. It doesn't even sound like prefix rebending.
That's gonna prepare be to my abandon next band game. Name.
Prefix rebending, right? So yeah. they go through a warp zone that just magically appears. I don't know why, whether it's to escape or because of the overload, it causes a warp zone to appear, and they jump through it, and it implies that the stadium just explodes because there's smoke coming through the warp zone.
Like that's why we don't know what game it is. That game doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, just it's gone, dead, never to return again.
I imagine they were going for like a tech mobile or something like that, though.
Yeah, probably. It's just it's just such a weird thing. So they're in this new world, which at the time they don't know it's Fasanadu yet. They don't know it's the world of Fasanadu. And they determine, like, well, we're going to see who can get to the warp zone home first. And so they stick to the teams that you saw on the football field, and they're going from to the different, you know, they're racing to see who can get them home first. And to, back to my point about, like, just there's stuff that happens in this that makes no sense, where, like, plot, there's major plot points that just feel like it comes out of nowhere. The whole impetus for them getting into Fasanadu is because apparently when Kevin shoots Kid Icarus's arrow, a electricity storm occurs. There's no explanation for it. There's no explanation given as to the logic.
Right. It makes as much sense as the villains from the previous episode just hanging out.
And the whole episode just kind of has moments like that where they just, it doesn't, something will happen and the logic behind it happening is just never explained, and it doesn't make any sense from just looking at it. It's not like something that's apparent. And that's what this, the show has a lot of that in general, but this episode just really feels like it runs rampant compared to even other Captain N episodes.
And it looks like that happened in the last episode too, because of how the bad guys of Puss in Boots were just there to pick up the zapper. Like it was a very kind of convoluted and very, just of the moment kind of, I don't know, very Deus Ex Machina, but to start a story.
It kind of was. I don't know, the impetus for this whole episode just confuses me. It really does. So they end up in Fasanadu, a trap gets sprung, and they are in like this weird quicksand type of pit. And Kevin's like, oh man,
is pouring in.
Yeah, the quicksand is pouring in. You're right. Oh my gosh. And then you meet two elves, and I love their names.
Ralph and Galf or something like that?
Ralph and Galf. I was just trying to like listen back to it. Yeah, it's Ralph and Galf. They meet two elves who are making fun of them. And I find it amusing that like, so in Fasanadu's world, elves and dwarves are at odds with each other. They're at war with each other. And usually in like almost any other context, you know, dwarves are the ugly ones dwarves are the ugly ones, and elves are like these beautiful beings. No one is attractive in this world at all. No,
absolutely not.
Arguably, if you have a weird thing, maybe the queen of the dwarves, like she's wearing this really uncomfortable looking corset and she's just pouring out of it. It is really odd. It's a really odd design. This pretty much is how this episode gets set up, where Kevin and Lana and Game Boy and Duke all meet the elves, and they're on the side of the elves, and Simon and Kid Icarus and Mega Man meet the dwarves, and they're on the side of the dwarves. And no one has interest. No one has good names. You know, you have Ralph and Galf, who are the subordinates to the King of Elves, who's just, what is it? Melfis is his name.
Yeah.
So he's, yes. And he looks like Elvis.
Yes, which at first I took as like a joke about the king, like the king of rock and roll. But then it made me realize, like, maybe because of like Elvis, like, is it a mm-hmm. play on that too? Like, yeah.
It definitely, yeah. I always thought so, but it is still a very strange, I don't know, the whole thing. It's just goofy. And I love the design of Melfis. He's so funny.
The most unsettling thing about him, though, is he has regular flesh-colored hands and a blue face.
Dude, you're right. I actually have a screen cap right here, and his hands look really kind of terrifying. At 5 minutes and 35 seconds, he's like halfway off the screen, and his left hand is just bending back in one of the strangest things I've ever seen. You might have to scrub through it like frame by frame, but it's very uncomfortable to look at.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And of course they don't have him as like young Elvis. He's potbelly Elvis.
Yep. It's older Elvis. And I don't know, like the world itself here is pretty interesting. I like the idea of that the war, the like this feud between elves and dwarves, and it's interesting how it kind of plays out. And then the comedy between the two groups is always really fun to me. Because basically what ends up happening is that they're both trying to get this crystal. And I think that's a good way to kind of move on with this plot instead of, because I'm having a hard time breaking it down beat by beat because it's a lot of jumping back and forth. But basically they both are trying to get this crystal that is in this fabled legend that this crystal was created. And it was, you know, the dwarves are like, the elves are the one that hid it from us. And the elves are like, the dwarves are the one that hid it from us. And we have to make sure we get it back. So that way, you know, because the dwarves are going to misuse it and we're the righteous ones. And that's pretty much how it is. And it kind of plays along with very heavy, like ham fisted and very heavy handed with everything going on with the end team of their competition that's happening between the two of them. Between the two groups of them, and they right. both
did
are.
You, did sorry, you go mention on. That? Did you mention that Simon and Icarus, Kid Icarus, and Mega Man are with the dwarves?
I did mention it in passing, though.
Yeah, and they also had like a little snippet of one of the dwarves talking to the evil one as well.
Yes, and you don't know who the evil one is yet, but basically he's speaking to a dwarf and he's like, keep an eye on what does he say, keep me informed, and he does an evil laugh and it's really very, very strange.
Yeah, very hammy.
I love the performance of the evil one in this. It's really goofy and really fun. Yeah, so
the best performance is the guru, though. I know you're getting to that, but that was my favorite voice.
The guru, who's like, where's he at? Like, where are you talking about? Is it the guru for the elves, right?
Yes, the guru for the elves. They go to speak to him, and so that they can find out what they need, like how to get to the key or whatever that they need. And he's got such a bizarre voice to go. He's got like this big Yosemite Sam mustache.
It's huge. Gigantic.
Yeah. And I think he's also wearing like a toga kind of thing as well.
Toga.
And a giant like Mad Hatter style hat with like vines growing out of it. It's so absurd. I love it.
It is a really fun, it's a fun design. I'm not going to lie. Like I really like how he looks, and he basically just kind of tells you, what does he say? Like I love this. They are telling, what is it? The elves kind of tell the end team about like what's going on. And then they go, like you said, they go speak to the, what is it? What was he called again?
The guru.
The guru, yeah. And they give him a broken piece of the crystal that they're talking about, and he just shoves it into his eyeballs. And then it comes out, and it goes up one of his minions' butts. It flies off and goes up like Ralph's or Galf's butt. It's very strange. But it basically is supposed to tell them where this hidden crystal thing is. And you find out that they mention it's in a world of like smoky, it's a misty, like there's a lot of mist. And he says, oh, it must mean the misty place that's inside of the world tree. It's a town inside of the world tree. And so to get there, they need a key to enter through the gate to get to this misty village or whatever. And you find out that the queen of the dwarves has this key that she worked, and the whole plot doesn't make a whole lot of sense because the place she gets the key is from the evil one. So the evil one, I guess, just for some reason, they don't really quite explain it. They say that he's been banished from the world tree, but they don't say what's keeping him out of the world tree. So he's kind of pitting the elves and dwarves against each other. So that way he can use them to get inside the world tree, and he can get the crystal back and take over the world. This episode has so much happening in it. so much, so often. There's so many scenes of like when, you know, we mentioned the other half of the end team are with the dwarves, and like the way that happens is like they're just kind of wandering around and they accidentally spring a trap, but the queen of dwarves gets captured in the trap that they spring. And queen of dwarves has a very big crush on Simon, and Simon loves it, can't get enough of this lovely lady. I don't know, this the episode just, it jumps around so much. I can see why you said at the beginning you felt like you were on drugs, because like between the designs of the elves and the dwarves, between the plot just going at breakneck speeds, just careening through this 21 minute episode, it's a pretty wild episode.
Yeah, the exposition is very it's very dense, and it's just constant, and it's mixed with the I don't know what to call it other than like filler stuff, like the football game. Like the, it's like back and forth, all this information's being thrown at you. Half of it is important, the other half is completely useless, and you're just like, it's rapid fire, and you're just supposed to parse what is meaningful and what isn't as the episode's going on. It's like, I can't handle this. And it takes probably to this point, probably, you know, like a third of the way through the episode. You got to be a good, like almost 10 minutes into the episode, 8 minutes before you're like, okay, I think I understand what's going on now.
Remember, a third of the way through the 10 minutes would be about a little less than halfway. Yeah.
So I guess it's, yeah, like 8 minutes it takes probably.
Yeah. Well, and actually around the 8 minute mark is where the, you know, the queen of the dwarves gets the key, or I think, yeah, gets a key from, you find out later, is the evil one. They all try to head across a bridge at the same time, the dwarves and the elves. They all get on it at the same time. And of course, chaos ensues, and they almost fall off, and Kevin does one of this is another one of those moments where I'm like, what the fuck's happening? Because they get trapped on the bridge, and actually moments before that, they're actually, the dwarves and elves are fighting each other. They just throw mud at each other.
Yeah,
I always thought that was kind of weird. Yeah. Slingshots and mud, it's very goofy. So they head across the bridge, and it's too much weight on the bridge, and it's about to fall, and Kevin uses his power pad to first, he like shoots a rock that like for some reason keeps the bridge, like it basically falls down and pins the rope of the bridge into the ground for a little bit longer, and just enough time for everyone to get off. So Kevin jumps up, and I really don't understand what he did. I'll be honest, he like did this fancy power pad move, but I don't understand how he actually helped everyone except for keeping the bridge there a little bit longer, which he did not need to jump around to do.
No. Well, first he throws the key, right? Or did
the queen throws the key. The queen throws the key, so it doesn't go down with them.
Right. Yeah. Then he lunges, but he doesn't jump forward. It's really hard to parse out the animation. Yeah. He jumps forward, shoots the stalagmite. I always forget which one it is. So whatever that it lands and pins down the rope. But also his jump took him to the end, so he was safe.
Yes.
And yeah, I guess it's just because one of them shouts like, the post is slipping or whatever, because like the post holding the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's really convoluted. And then it's important for later, but when the dwarf is about to grab the key, Kevin jumps and steps on it and like pushes it down into the mud.
Yep. And I actually am at that scene right now and like kind of like scrolling through it as we're recording. And yeah, because Kevin takes the key from the queen, goes through the gate and closes the door behind him. So now the queen and the other half of the Captain N team, that they hate each other right now, Simon and Kid Icarus and Mega Man, they're kind of stuck. So what, honestly, kind of a clever idea. Mega Man asks the queen if she has any more gold coins that she used to pay for the key. She's like, yeah, but not enough to buy another one. He's like, oh, don't worry about that. And he takes the coins and he melts them, which is what you're talking about, because Kevin stepped on the key. It created an imprint of it in the ground. So Mega Man kind of smartly used it as a way to as a mold for another key, which, can we just talk about the design of that key? It makes. I'm looking at it right now. It's got a circle. It's got a circle at the bottom, and then it almost has like a fish hook at the top. Yeah. I don't understand how that locks or unlocks any door ever. It doesn't look like it would work.
Yes, just like the plot of this episode.
Very, not sure if it locks or unlocks.
Yeah.
It's a very this whole episode is just insane. I feel like we say that every time too. Like every single episode, we're like, "What is going on here?" Literally, right? So the queen and Simon, everyone else is able to enter in through that door. And the very next scene, there is a weird. So we're at 11 minutes and 54 seconds. All right, they're at the top of a set of stairs, and this weird pink monster comes out of nowhere, and the design of it is one of the wildest things I've ever seen. It's got pink tentacles, giant pink kangaroo feet with teal green like claws on its feet, but it's got like an alien head with like Shrek ears with like red antenna coming out of the Shrek ears with like almost looks like Shrek, like eyes that would look like Shrek. It's almost like Shrek's ears but eyes, and that have like weird green eyebrows on them. The whole design is one of the craziest. It's really fun to look at. Oh, and it's got like this dark green spiny tail. It's got spikes on it.
Yeah, it's got like a weird armored tail. Yeah, it's so bizarre.
I love terrifying. It.
Yeah. It's but amazing.
But once again, it's just one of those things where like, what just happened? Like they spent all this time on a really cool design, and like it makes it seem like it's going to be something super important, only to then Simon just whips it, and then that's it. You know, like that's all there is to it. Like it just, they do this big wind up for nothing, but a coin is left in its stead, which is kind of cool. So then they get to the Mist Town, and I actually kind of like the design of the Mist Town. I like all the rogue elves that are kind of hanging out there, and the fact they don't really care about like the rules and laws of the outside world.
I wanted to point out when they enter the saloon, the sound design in this episode is very memorable for a few reasons. Yeah. But I'll start with this first one. Walk inside the saloon, of course, it's supposed to be like this kind of a bunch of rabble rousing, you know, rogues and things like that. And they've got all this kind of general cacophony going on when they go in because there's all these people. And I listened really closely because there was one like high-pitched female voice that I could hear out of all of it. And I was like, I think that actor is actually saying something. So I rewound it. And she goes, wait a second. You ate all the cashews. And I thought that was true.
clearly the director's like, we're just going to add a little bit of a touch to this. Just a little nice little touch just to make this like this saloon feel more real.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Sure if originally you could probably understand all of them, but that one, like, you ate all the cashews, I thought was hysterical.
It's pretty good. I'm not going to lie. It's pretty good. Oh, they go to the saloon, though, because they're trying to find some dude who has a ruby ring. And they just find a dude with a ruby ring, and it just happens to be.
They don't even find it. He finds them. He's like, you're looking for me.
Oh yeah, he finds them. And on top of that, like, what has the ruby ring ever been mentioned prior in the episode? I don't think it was.
What they were supposed to be looking for in that's what Guru told them they needed to find.
Okay. Like I said at the top of the episode,
but there's so like I don't expect you to remember that. The only reason I remember that is because we've had closed captions on while talking about it.
Oh, but I'm also so tired. But Kevin challenges this ruby ring wearing dude to
Snake Eye Snuff.
What's his name?
Snake Eye Snuff.
Snake Eye Snuff? Are you serious right now?
Yes. What a great name. Did you notice his voice? Did you notice the voice actor?
No.
I'm pretty sure, unless it's someone doing an impersonation, which I don't know why you would do an impersonation of him in the 90s. Pretty sure it's Bobcat Goldthwait. the voice of the voice of Pain from Hercules, Disney's Hercules.
I did not know Bobcat Goldthwait did that voice.
I mean, it's either him or someone's doing an impersonation, but he was barely a stand-up comedian in the 90s, so I don't know if he would have been like recognizable enough to do an impersonation of.
You know what? I will look at his acting credits.
While you're looking that up, I'll tell our listeners that Bobcat was his nickname because he was in a comedy duo with Tom Kenny, the voice of SpongeBob and like zillions of other cartoon characters, and they were a duo called Bobcat and Tomcat. Like, that was their thing together. And just Bobcat stuck, and Tom Kenny went on to do his own cartoon thing, but they did start out as comedians together. And Bobcat now is like a director, but I think they started out as comedy and like doing voice acting.
If that is him, he went uncredited because it's not on IMDb.
I put it out there to our listeners that it's gotta be him.
I have no idea. I mean, it's not on IMDb, but that doesn't mean that it's not the case. If he wasn't credited, you know, then it's not going to make a bit of difference, you know.
Yeah. He's got the trembly, like, you know, like a teenager voice when it squeaks because it's, like, not fully deep yet. He does, like, that warbly, like, it's got to be him.
okay. They have this contest, and it's basically like this obstacle course that's like hovering well into the air. And Kevin and what's this dude's name again? I'm sorry.
Snake Eyes Snuff.
And the way Kevin defeats him is that Snake Eyes tries to cheat when they're both swinging on a rope. And it's like one of the longest rope swings I've ever seen. And he tries to cut Kevin's rope. And Kevin, he's like, "Hey, you're cheating." And he goes, "Don't you know cheating's part of the rules here?" And he's like, "Oh, well, I don't want to break the rules then." So Kevin cheats. And it's a really weird moment because he kind of saves him like last minute. Cause the dude essentially cut his own rope is kind of what they're implying. And he's about to fall. And Kevin, you don't see it, but you see Kevin reach with his legs. And it's kind of implied that off camera, he was able to rescue him. But then it goes to commercial break, and so it fades to black. And when it comes back, he's just dragging him back into the tavern, and that's it's like, okay, it would have been cool to see, but you know, fine, it's cool, whatever.
I got excited by the music they used for the race too. It's back,
dude. With lyrics this time,
yeah,
the filler music. So, listeners, for those who haven't followed the series all the way through. In the first season, there was a lot of licensed music used as backing tracks for specific moments. And obviously on YouTube and also in the DVD re-releases, they didn't really have the licensing rights to do that anymore. So they're all filled with this generic do 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 or something like that. I forget.
And now we know it's called Mega Move because that's what the Mega Move. Yeah. Heard the lyrics.
And then this time they actually have lyrics, like, so we haven't really heard it at all in the second season, and it's episode 8. It's finally back, baby. We hear it again, and they hear, and you, there's lyrics to it.
Yeah.
I remember watching it like, oh my gosh, I was so happy it was back. It's such a weird thing to say considering it's this show, means, but I was so happy it's back.
That means when they re-released the first season, they're like, what are we going to do? Like, I remember Mega Move. That was a good cut right there. Like, they just like, let's keep using Mega Move. Boom.
Mega Move.
It works though. I like that.
It does. It does. So after all this happens, you know, the other half of the end team shows up, you know, Simon and Mega Man and Kid Icarus. And at this point, Lana's just fucking sick of everyone's shit. She's so mad. She's like, stop. Because throughout the whole episode, she's just constantly trying to tell them, like, do you really need to be competing with each other? Do you really need to do this? Do you really need to do that? And both Kevin and Simon are both like, oh, it's fun. You know, it's just motivation. It's just healthy competition. And clearly they're being shitty to each other. So I love that Lana is like, I'm just done with this. I'm fucking done with both of y'all. So she takes the ruby ring And she ends up finding the guy who made the hidden crystal and finds the hidden, the legendary crystal that the dwarves and elves have been talking about for the whole episode. And you find out it was crafted by a man, none other than only known as Dwelf, who is a half dwarf, half elf.
Who and then would he have takes thought? The time to point to his ears and then his nose.
Yep.
Because it's implied that elves have the pointy ears and dwarves have the big pointy nose. And he like, yep. He's like, mm-hmm, and he like points at his ear and his nose.
And he's immediately ostracized by both elves and dwarves because they're like, oh, well, you're half this. Well, we can't have you. The dwarves and elves are absolutely awful people. I understand it's meant to play up, but after a while, it's just kind of like, it gets a little.
They're not very likable.
No, they're not likable at all. I actually think the queen, I haven't talked about this. The voice of the queen of dwarves, I think, is actually really fun. She's kind of got like a Brooklyn accent almost, or a Brooklyn voice type of thing. I love the performance of the voice actress there.
Yes, it's got a very, what's her name from Hocus Pocus there? The actress is escaping me now.
Bette Midler?
Yes, it's got Bette Midler quality to it.
Okay, I was going to say, I'm like, Bette Midler doesn't sound like that in Hocus Pocus, but you're just thinking of the actress. Oh, no.
Yeah,
definitely has a bet. Yeah, I could hear that. And I love the voice. I just like the performance of the queen. I find her and Melfis. Like, Melfis I find a little bit more annoying, but his visual design is so fun to me. And the queen, I don't like the visual design quite as much, but her character is just really fun to me. I don't know why. I just find her really amusing.
Yeah.
So they get to this crystal, and then this is where the dwarf double crosses everyone. The evil dwarf that you saw at the beginning, who's actually working for the evil one, double crosses everyone. And this scene I had so many goddamn problems with. I shouldn't say so many. I had one major one. He takes the crystal. Everybody just watches him take the crystal and run up the steps. And that's the first problem. Like, no one tries to stop him. Second problem, for reasons, there's just a cave in, and the entrance, that exit that he ran in, just suddenly is closed up with rocks. And I was just like, why? There was no earthquake. I'm understand.
I'm wondering if it's implied that he used the crystal to do it.
Maybe that's the case. But yeah, so he takes it to the evil one. They have to find another way out, which literally Dwelf is just like, here's another exit. And so it's not like it's even hard to find another exit. He just says, here's another exit. They come outside, and then they're facing the evil one with the crystal that has, you know, the four different elements, wind, water, fire, and earth. And he starts using it against them. He creates a tornado, tries to knock them off of a tree branch they're on. That just kind of knocks them down, doesn't really knock them. Well, it does actually knock them off. One of the end team has to ride. Let me get to it real quick here. Duke is riding Game Boy down, and Kid Icarus is falling, which makes no sense because Kid Icarus can fly. I don't know why he's falling.
I might use that as our thumbnail. I love Duke's expression. I love
it's so expressionless.
Game Boy's strain on his face. And yeah, the fact that Kid Icarus is falling when he's got wings, clearly. Yeah, it's mm-hmm. great.
So then they confront the evil one, which this show does this a lot, where they'll just like walk straight up to the bad guy and just start having a conversation with him. I'm like, why don't you just go at him? Like, I don't understand. He freezes them all, and Mega Man uses his power, his like energy jets, or sorry, his like blasters, energy jets. I am so fucking tired today, listeners. It's his blaster. Like, it's oh my God. It's his blaster. So he uses his blaster to unfreeze everybody. And I gotta say, though, the end of season one is where Mega Man becomes human, right? Yeah. So he supposedly becomes human. How does he still have all these abilities? He shouldn't be able to do all this if he's a human now. Whatever. They clearly don't care. And so neither will I. The end team starts fighting him. Kevin is able to distract him a little bit, but ends up using all the power in his power pad. Simon ends up saving him, and the crystal ends up getting thrown into a crevice, like a fissure opens up, and it falls down in there. And when it closes in, it destroys the crystal. And that's honestly how the episode. There's one more scene, just kind of with the elves and dwarves, but that's the majority of the plot of this episode. It's just kind of them running around, and
afterwards the evil one's like, "Oh, I'll get you next time," and flies away. I'll get you
next time, Gadget.
Yeah, it's just like Dr. Claw. And, I know. And the evil dwarf, he was the one that kind of, you know, betrayed everybody. He's like, yeah. "Hey guys, sorry about that. He was going to kill everybody if I didn't help him." And they're like, "Okay, cool." Like,
just don't let it happen again. That's all she says. I'm like, "What?"
Yeah.
What? It's such a throwaway excuse. I'm like, "Joe, just have him be evil. It's fine. It doesn't, whatever." And well, the big lesson though is, so just like Simon saving Kevin, the queen dwarf ends up saving the king elf, because he's hanging off of the newly opened fissure, and she saves him, and they're friends now. Like, you know, they get along. And of course it's not for long, because the very end of the episode is like, "Well, do you all know where the nearest warp zone is?" And then they're like, "Well, an elf won't know the best way to get to the nearest warp zone. Oh, a dwarf definitely wouldn't know." Like, they just kind of start, and then a mud fight starts up once again. The episode ends with Simon getting, it's not white stuff this time, that's a first for Simon, it's brown stuff this time, just getting sludged in the face.
Yes, I was like, "Wait, they're really not going to figure out how to get home?" And then yeah, I immediately, my last note was, "But Simon still gets stuff on his face."
Simon always gets stuff on it, white stuff on his face, at least some type of sludge. That seems to be the only one of the big connecting through lines. Simon just constantly getting creamed in the face.
And he doesn't even get a chance to wipe it off. It's almost like freeze frame splatting still, like,
and then, yep.
And then like immediate cut to credits. It's so awkward.
That happens a lot in this season, I'm noticing, where the credits just kind of show up very abruptly. You know, the episode ends and just credits. We're here now. Are there any final thoughts on the episode, though, Dex? I feel like we kind of burned through the last little bit pretty quickly, but is there any other things that you want to bring up with this?
My final thoughts are, my apologies to the listeners if they have no idea what we were just talking about.
Because we had no idea what we were just talking about.
Exactly. It was so bizarre. But I mean, just like the previous episode, this followed a game, at least it's a game's lore. I think this one, the Puss in Boots game is much simpler in comparison to Fazanadu. Because that one, Fazanadu, is basically like an action RPG. So there's that's like trying to take all the stuff from one Final Fantasy game and squeeze it into a 22-minute sitcom. Like, you're not going to be able to, or else it'll be a fever dream like this was. So once, you know, like I said, it took 8 to 10 minutes to, once it started settling in what they were going for with this episode, it was a little bit easier to follow, but even still, like, it was so bizarre. And I'm still determined to prove that that's Bobcat Goldthwait.
Listeners, if you know if it was Bobcat Goldthwait or who it was, please write into the show. It'd be very much appreciated.
Yes, it's kind of like how Paul Rubens, the Pee Wee Herman,
yeah,
he went by a different name originally. So I don't know if any of the listeners have seen Flight of the Navigator, which is like one of the most underrated Disney movies ever. He's the voice of the alien spaceship in that, but he's not credited as Paul Rubens. He's credited as whatever his previous stage name was. And supposedly it was because he was in talks with Tim Burton about the Pee Wee Herman character, and that's the voice he pretty much used for the spaceship.
Oh, okay.
So interesting. I think there was something to do with that.
I'm gonna see if I can check on IMDb what voice, real quick. So I originally, what I did was I looked up what Bobcat Goldthwait's credits were, but for what was the character in this episode that you think sounded like him?
Snake Eye Snuff, I think, or Snake Eye.
Oh,
or
so Snake it was Eye Snake Eye Snuff. Okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure if that's who you were talking about or not. So let me go to the individual website, the individual name, episode.
His real name is Robert Francis Goldthwait, if that helps.
Let me see. If I click on Top Cast to see everybody, does it give anything? I don't see anything on this because a lot of it, like Ian James Corlett did a voice in this, and isn't he known for, he's Goku in a lot of the DBZ stuff.
Like the original Canadian?
He might have been the original Goku. I'm not quite sure.
Because I thought it was like Sean Schmell or something like that is the current Goku.
Okay.
Or Sean Schmell.
Who the heck is this one? Anthony Holland. He looks old as shit in this one, in the picture that he has on there. His last acting credit was in Supernatural in 2011, but he's done some stuff. So I'm not quite sure. Yeah, they don't really have like there's a lot of different actors like Alvin Sanders and Shane Meyer, Annabelle Kershaw. Like there's a bunch of people. Babs Chula, what a name. Who the hell is Babs Chula? She's just credited with additional voices. Like I don't know what else she has done. Her most recent acting credit was Fathers and Sons from 2010, which I 2010. Oh my god! Once again, exhausted. 2010, and I'm not really sure what that is. She was in one of the X-Files movies, it looks like. So I'm not quite sure. I don't know. Snake I don't know who did the voice.
Snelf was his last name. Snelf, of course, because it's an elf pun. If you can call that a pun, I don't even know if that constitutes a pun. If you just put elf at the end of words.
And if I try to do Snake Eye Snelf, it just Google thinks I'm trying to say shelf, so it doesn't really work. Yeah. And obviously, Snake Eyes is G.I. Joe, yeah. So it's you're getting a whole bunch of stuff here. But all right, I think we should wrap this episode up. It's We've been doing pretty well.
Yeah,
it's a mystery. If you listeners, please write in. But that will do it for this episode of Still Loading for this Captain N episode. We are getting close, man, to the end of season two already. We only have 5 episodes left of season two because 6 is just a clip show. It's when Mother Brain rules and it's just a clip show from assorted moments from the first two seasons. So I don't know exactly what we're going to do with that, but there's only 5 episodes left of season two. And then season three is going to be weird because those episodes are only 15, like 10 to 15 or like 10 minutes each or something like that. Cause they shared, the series was reduced to 11 minutes and it shared a half hour time slot with Super Mario World. So, 7 were new and then 6 were reruns. So I don't know exactly what they mean by that. They were Nightmare on Mother Brain Street, Mr. and Mrs. Mother Brain, 3 Men and a Dragon, Quest for the Potion of Power. No footage was cut, but was split into 2 11-minute parts with the first part airing. Okay. So, yeah, they just kind of the Invasion of Paper Peddlers. I'm assuming that's later on this season.
That's the one we need to get Gabe back on for. Gabe Swore.
Did he ask for that one specifically?
Paper Boy. Yeah, I think so.
All right, I'll have to reach out to him then soon because that's going to be if I'm mathing this out correctly, Dexter. There's no new Captain N next month because it is Mario month. So the next one will be in May, then June, July, August is when that episode with Paperboy would be due out. So we got a little bit of time until then. But yeah. That should do it for this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. You know, you got a little bit behind the scenes of like what our ideas and plans are going forward with this. But Dexter, where can the good people find you online?
Oh, everyone, come one, come all, come find me on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter, if that still exists. You can just find it under my name, Dexter Morrill, DexterMorrill. So that's where I am. That's usually where I'm sharing artwork or retweeting awesome video game history stuff, usually from our pal Stefan Reese, or you know, sometimes I'll even, you know, be talking with Gabe on there, Gabe Swore. And you can talk to me too. I share my artwork, other people's stuff. Yeah, I'll be there.
And as usual for me, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillOwningPod on all of them. And once again, if Twitter is still alive, actually, I'm also over on Hive Social at StillOwningPod and also Twitch at StillOwningPod. I always forget to shout out Twitch. I stream usually twice a week, or I try to. So still at StillOwningPod over on Twitch, usually on Tuesday and Saturday nights, unless there's a recording session, which actually this is a Saturday, the day we're recording this. And I have a recording session tonight, so there's no stream tonight. But anyway, if you want to support the show, you can do it in a number of ways. You can give it a 5-star rating or review on Apple Podcasts / whichever podcasting app you use, because that helps more people find the show and it makes me feel warm and fuzzy. And I like feeling warm and fuzzy. If you want to support the show another way, you can go to patreon.com/stillowningpod. And if you send me a couple of your hard-earned dollars, I will return to you some bonus content. For $1 a month, you'll get all the mainline episodes a few days earlier at a better bit rate. As well as I started this year voting, which will happen, I'm hoping quarterly, but it'll depend on my schedule. But basically picking games to talk about for an episode of the show. So I actually already posted the first one, and so far Siphon Filter is winning. So it's looking like Siphon Filter might be the first official game that I cover from a patron poll, which is kind of cool. But that's all for $1, and the next tier up is $4 a month, and you get everything at the $1 tier, all the voting rights and all the episodes a few days early. But you also get two bonus mini episodes a month, and one of those mini episodes is a series of me torturing myself through 220 bootleg games on the My Arcade Gamer 5 portable system, featuring such classics as Curly Monkey 1 and 2 and Homing Chicken. You know, who doesn't want to learn about such classics such as that? So that's for $4 a month. And then for $5 a month, you'll get everything else at the previous two levels, plus access to Still Bonding, which is a James Bond podcast where my friend Erica from the Monster Madness podcast, her and I bond over 007, and we are going through all of the James Bond movies. At the time this episode comes out, it either has just released or will release an episode of Still Bonding on Her Majesty's Secret Service, which was George Lazenby's one and only outing as James Bond. So be on the lookout for that. But yeah, that's all that I got going over on Patreon. And of course, the final shout out is the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to put video games and video game consoles in the hands of kids receiving inpatient care at hospitals. So if you want to support them, go to bitbybitfoundation.org and consider donating. That will do it for this episode of Still Loading. That will do it for this Captain N episode. Dexter, once again, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
And we will think of you the next time we play video games. Thank you all for listening.
Thank you. Bye.